Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of SAFT Podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by my good co-host Piyush, and we are looking forward to this 81st episode as we look into the moral argument. Wow, man, we're just 19 episodes away from hitting the century, but one episode at a time. So if you've been following along, as I mentioned, we've been looking at the moral argument. And in the last episode, we covered a bit of ground. So Piyush, do you want to give a quick recap of what we covered in the last episode?
Yeah. Before that, definitely it's great to be back. And in the previous episode, we were looking at moral values and atheism, how they don't fall with each other. They don't fall along, tag along. And I really encourage, if you want to get a deeper knowledge about it, you should go ahead and check the previous episode. We have the link right here. And in this episode, we'll be exploring about moral duties and atheism. So that's what we are going to be looking at over here. And let's just straight off dive into it. Yeah.
Yeah. So as Piyush mentioned, moral values, moral duties. Let me just quickly draw the distinction between them so that we're all on the same page. Values, moral values, have to do with the inherent worth of an action. It is a good action or a bad action. But values doesn't tell us whether we should do it or not. Like I said, it is good for me to be a doctor. The inherent worth of being a doctor is pretty good. But therefore, it is not necessary or commanded that I must be a doctor. Values just tell us whether something is good or bad. Duties tell us whether something should be done or not, right and wrong. So it is, when I say it is wrong for me to do X, it means that I must not do X. Then this next question, is X good or bad? So values and duties, this is the distinction. Values tells us about the inherent worth of something, and we use the terms good and bad to distinguish between the two types of values. And the duties tell us about the obligatoriness, the obligation, it should be done or not done. That tells us, and we use the terms right and wrong to distinguish between the two sets of duties. And as Piyush mentioned in the last episode, we saw that objective moral values cannot be held under atheism. The reason is, if you are bringing about moral values as a result of byproduct of socio-biological evolution, then there is nothing really objective, really fundamental about the value system that you have under atheism. And now we're looking at the duty part. And as I mentioned, this is really difficult to defend under atheism, and we shall see very clearly now. Under atheism, we humans are just yet another bunch of animals running around. We are clothed, we have some differences, but fundamentally, we are also animals, just like any other species. Equal accidental byproducts of evolution. Now, we have different distinguishing characteristics, right? Just like, I forgot which type of bird makes its nest by stitching things together. But there are birds that are able to very highly, with very intricate design, develop their own nest. And then there are dogs, the dog species that just simply want to lie around. They're not going to make kennels or anything. They're just simply lying around. So we can see a distinguishing factor which tells about the skill set of these two species. But fundamentally, they're both part of the animal world. They're equally animals, right? But when it comes to humans have higher skill set, higher ability, but somewhere it's difficult for us to say that we are as equally animal as a dog. And now, under atheism, we have no other option but to say that we are as equally accidental products, as equally indifferent in moral understanding, value, and purpose as any other animal. Because we are not here by purpose, we don't have any moral values given to us, and we don't have any specific meaning, because we are here by pure accidental evolution. Now, if that is the case, ethicist Richard Taylor, he is illustrating a point. Now, in his point, he's asking us to imagine human beings living without customs or laws. No customs, no laws. And he says that the scenario is one person kills another person and takes his belongings and possessions. And then he goes on to say this. Such actions, though injurious to their victims, are no more unjust or immoral than they would be if done by one animal to another. A hawk that seizes a fish from the sea kills it, but does not murder it. And another hawk that seizes the fish from the talons of the first takes it, but does not steal it. For none of these things is forbidden. And exactly the same considerations apply to the people we are imagining. So in summary, in Richard Taylor's hypothesis, you have humans living, no customs, no laws. Now, under that scenario, even if you do something that is injurious to someone else, you can't really say it is immoral. Why? Because you see these actions happening day in and day out in the animal world. In this example, a bird snatches fish from another bird. It's taking it. It's not really stealing it. So if humans don't have any real moral laws out there, then we are just as indifferent under the moral perspective when we compare to any other animal or bird or plant or anything out there that engages in any sort of activities. So we come to the key question. If this is the case, we are indifferent among other animals, we are here by accident and all of that, and we find it difficult to build up values, and if we can't really say the distinction between stealing and taking or killing and murdering, the question comes with all the more force. If there is no God, then who or what imposes the moral duties upon us? And Richard Taylor goes on to say this most convincing way to put it across. He says that the concept of moral obligation is unintelligible apart from the idea of God. The words remain, but their meaning is gone. In other words, our understanding of moral obligation, moral duties, like you ought to do this, you should not do this, you must do this, all of that obligation, our understanding of moral obligation cannot be made sense apart from the idea of God. So if you do not have God, an atheist is saying that if you do not have God, then there is no one to tell you what you should do or what you should not do. The words remain, but their meaning is gone. Now, let me just give you a much more of a real world engaging with this. If this is the case, if this is truly the case, if you don't have objective moral duties without God, then it becomes difficult for us to condemn, put down certain actions and praise other actions. So actions of nobleness and generosity and kindness. It's difficult for us to uplift these actions as things that should be done and then look on actions like rape and murdering and stealing and say these are actions that should not be done. So what happens is that there are some actions like rape and incest. These are not biologically or sociologically advantageous because in the course of human development, they became taboo. They became frowned upon. They are not welcomed in a civilized society and so on and so forth. But then all that remains is that rape and incest is not really wrong. It's just that we don't want to do it or it is not part of the way we live our life and so on and so forth. So in an atheistic view, then rape, incest, well, there's nothing really wrong about it because all this behavior goes out in the animal world. And like I mentioned, in an atheistic evolutionary framework, there is nothing really distinctive of humans. There is nothing really fundamentally different of the humans and the animal world. So these actions of rape and everything goes on in the animal world. Like I said, like Richard Taylor's example says, a bird snatches fish from another bird. This action also happens in the human world. But somehow we want to distinguish both. A bird snatches, but a human steals. Now, if we are not really distinct from the animal world, and if these actions always go about in the animal world, then what is really wrong about humans doing it? What characteristic or fundamental basis do we have to say that when humans do it, it is morally wrong? When humans do it, there is some sort of obligation incumbent upon the human to do or not do it, that he ought to do or he ought not to do it. Where is this binding principle coming together? And the point is brought together when humanist philosopher, whom we looked at in the previous episode, Paul Kurtz, when he said that the moral principles that govern our behavior are rooted in habit and custom, feeling and fashion. Which means, as we said before, in the process of human development, we looked at rape and incest and said these are not things that we want to be part of our civilization and kept them aside. So then, as Paul Kurtz said, why do we look down on certain actions? Why do we uplift certain actions? Well, it's not because these are objectively good or these are objectively right. It's simply because we have developed certain habit, certain custom, certain feeling and fashions that tell us you shouldn't rape or you shouldn't do incest. If that is the case, then all that the rapist is doing is going against the herd morality. So as a group, we hold together certain understandings of what we should do or not. And he is someone who is going against the tide. So in a sense, the rapist is not doing anything other than acting unfashionably. Now, when we say about someone acting unfashionably, or a quick example is when Ranveer Singh was appearing in different galas with a wild set of dress and stuff. He was just acting unfashionably. There was an understanding about what would match with your colors, what dress got to go with, what would you wear to a gala, an event, and so on and so forth. And he just went against the tide. Well, we won't say that that was wrong for him to do. No, it's just fashionable, unfashionable. We do things as a custom. He did things differently. And that's about it. If Paul Kurtz's understanding is what is truly the case, if our moral principles are a result of habit, custom, feelings, and fashion, then any person who deviates from that is just being unfashionable. Why should we be really serious about someone being unfashionable? What is really wrong about rape if it is fundamentally just someone being unfashionable? And so what happens is that then not even governments or cultures or even the Supreme Court can be the stopping point. Because in all of these institutions, it is just humans coming together and making up laws. There is nothing beyond us, nothing transcending us that is giving us these laws. We are not discovering these moral duties. We are merely inventing them. So if it is one government, there may be another government that opposes it. For example, there are governments that actively push forward with genocide, and another government opposes it. Who should win? Who is to decide? There is one culture that would want to promote slavery. Another culture wants to oppose it. Who should win?
Right.
Who is to decide? The Supreme Court would object to a certain action. The Supreme Court in another nation would object, would support it. Who is to win? Who is to decide? Because fundamentally, all these institutions are man-made. And if it's just us humans who remain, and if we are the torchbearers and the pioneers and the inventors of moral duties and values, who is to say what is right and what is wrong? What standard can we ascribe to say that something is superior to something else, or someone is superior to someone else, and therefore what he or she says must be the rule for everyone? We are all equally human. And even worse, under atheism, we are all equally animal. So we find it extremely difficult to build up moral duties, moral right and wrong, moral obligations on how we ought to conduct our life.
Okay. You mentioned that, building a moral framework as a human, it is very difficult. But let's take a scenario when there is someone who did build a moral framework without referring to God. So how strong do you think that will stand?
Right. So it's a good point to bring it up, because it's quite essential to clear the air. And I think I mentioned this in the first episode of the moral argument series, is that the point of the moral argument is not, should we believe in God to live a moral life? Now, we all agree that if actual objective moral values and duties do exist, then whether you believe in God or not is irrelevant. You can do good things, avoid bad things, live a right life and avoid a wrong life. So the question is not whether we should believe in God to live a moral life. And the question is not either that, can we develop a system of ethics without referring to God? Because if an atheist or a naturalist agrees that human beings have objective value, then he can build out an ethical system that has the objective value and objective worth of human beings as the foundation. He can build out an ethical system that the theist also would agree to. Because as a Christian, we also agree that humans have objective value. So it is not about whether you refer to God, whether you mention God or not in your ethical framework. And it is, the argument is also not whether we can recognize the existence of objective morality without referring to God. Because the theists also would agree that, you know, a person need not believe in God or need to say that I read it from God or I heard it from God for them to also to do good things like, you know, take care of the children, help the neighbor, so on and so forth. So the argument is not about whether you need to believe in God to be a moral person, whether you need to refer to God in building up a system of ethics or a system of morality. And the argument is not whether you need to have God's help or whether you need to recognize the very existence of objective moral values with or without reference to God. The actual argument is, the one that we're dealing with is that it is not belief in God, it is not reference to God, but it is actually God who is necessary for objective reality of the moral values and duties. So it is not your belief whether God exists or not, but it is whether God exists or not that tells us whether there is objective moral values and duties. And the argument is also not whether God is necessary for our knowledge of moral values and duties. In other words, the argument is not that you need to have God to know moral values and duties. Now, this is a quick distinction that I would like to make before as we come to the end of the podcast. Distinguishing between moral ontology and moral epistemology. Now, some of you may be familiar with these terms. Ontology has to do with the very existence of something. Epistemology has to do with the way we know something. Now, that is a very simplified definition. Epistemology and ontology are very diverse and complex fields. But fundamentally, they mean this. Ontology has to do with the study of something that exists. What is its nature? Does it exist? And so on and so forth. Epistemology is the study of how we know something. So the moral argument is about moral ontology. Does objective moral values and duties exist apart from God? It is talking about the existence of objective morality. If I was talking about moral epistemology, I would ask, how do I know moral values and duties? Because then I'm talking about my knowledge of moral values and duties. Do I need God for me to know moral values and duties? That is a question of moral epistemology. So we're not talking about whether we need God to know moral values and duties. We are asking, can we have morality, objective morality in the first place if there is no God? The point is that we can use reflections and intuitive thought to figure out whether something is good, bad, right, and wrong. Right? Those are the mechanisms that we could use to figure out whether something is right and wrong. We would think about it, we would think through it, and then we realize, oh yeah, that was a wrong choice, right? That was a bad choice. We can come through to that. So thinking through moral intuitions, all of that, those are mechanisms to figure out whether something is right and wrong. And the Bible actually sides with this. In Romans 2 verse 14, 15, it says that God's moral laws are written on our hearts. And that even those who do not know God or His laws do naturally the things of the law as their conscience bears witness to them. So in other words, even scripture says that even people who reject God, who has nothing to do with God, it is hardwired within their human mind, within their conscience to look into it, to reflect on it and make sense of what is to be done and not to be done. So the moral argument is saying that if you remove God out of the equation, you cannot have objective morality. You cannot have objective good or bad. You cannot have objective right and wrong. It is not telling whether you need to believe in God to know this, whether you know we need to believe in God to live a moral life or not. So that is a clear distinction. And which is why Paul Kurtz, he says this, the central question about moral and ethical principles concerns their ontological foundation. If they are neither derived from God nor anchored in some transcendent ground, are they purely ephemeral? Kurt says that the key question that we are asking about is whether these moral principles exist. Do they exist? Where are they based upon? What is the foundation? The ontological question about their very existence. And he says that if you are not deriving these moral principles from God or from some other transcendent source. So you see, Kurtz gives two options. You can go for God or for something that is transcendent. Transcendent meaning beyond us, beyond our reach, beyond in some sense. So there are two options for you to build a foundation for morality. It is either God or something that is transcendent. Note that he isn't saying humans or human institutions or human structures or cultures. Because as you mentioned previously, and as I mentioned here also, if it is humans, human structures, institutions and cultures, then the question comes up, who is to say, who is right, who should win, who is superior?
Hmm.
So Kurt says that if it is not God and if it is not something that is beyond us, that is the foundation of morality, then is morality just fleeting? Is it just transient? Is it just temporary? Is it not really, really part of reality? And I think that question really stands behind to poke anyone who wants to engage with this question and ask, if you remove God out of the equation, what is your foundation for moral values, good and bad, inherent worth of an action? And what is your foundation for the objective moral duties, right and wrong, obligations that we hold together in our daily life?
Wow, that was a lot which was covered in the previous 20 minutes. And it's very important that we understand about how moral duties and atheism cannot go hand in hand. And I'd like to encourage all of us to, you know, I feel that since there was a lot covered, so we should go ahead and listen to the podcast twice or thrice and make sure to understand whatever was explained today. And with that, we come to the end of this episode. And I really encourage you to follow us on our social media pages so that you stay updated with what's happening. And we have a lot of content being rolled out. So if you don't want to miss it, then make sure to follow us. And that's it from today's episode. We'll see you in the next one. Till then, stay safe and take care.
Thanks for tuning into SAF Podcast, where faith and reason unite to equip seekers like you. If any of today's conversation struck a chord, share the knowledge to help others on their journey. Join our community on Facebook, X, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Podchaser. Your feedback fuels our journey. Dive deeper with our free ebook at ebook.saftapologetics.com. For more about our team and our passion, visit saftapologetics.com. Saft equips believers to defend their faith anytime, anywhere.